shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. Right, now, Paul quotes that in Romans, the 9th chapter, and I think it's verses 12 and 13, if you want to look at that. And notice here, and Paul quotes this to show that God is working according to purpose or plan, and does not do things simply in the human way of doing them. Beginning here with verse, Paul is all beginning here. Well, let's begin here. Almost have to begin with verse 6 to get the idea. But is it not? It is not as though the word of God is come to naught. For they are not all Israel that are of Israel, neither because they are Abraham's seed are they all children. But in Isaac shall thy seed be called. That is, it is not the children of the flesh that are children of God, but the children of the promise are reckoned for a seed. For this is a word of promise: according to this season will I come, and Sarah shall have a son. And not only so, but Rebekah also, having conceived, the elder shall serve the younger, even as it is written. Now he quotes this passage. No, he quotes another one here. Jacob I love, but Esau I hated. Now that's in Malachi. Notice that in a moment. All right? So there's a point here in this is to show, God is showing here, that the difference between the two men when they are born, the two nations, one will be spiritual, the other will be purely fleshly. The Edomites is over against the Israelites. Now when he says Esau, Jacob I loved, but Esau I hated, this is a quotation from Malachi, the first chapter, speaking of the nation, not of the boys, for neither one of them had done anything good or anything bad. Now in verse 2 here of Malachi 1, I have loved you, saith Jehovah. Yet ye say, wherein hast thou loved us? Now the answer, was not Esau Jacob's brother, saith Jehovah? Yet I loved Jacob, but Esau I hated, and made his mountains a desolation, and gave his heritage to the jackals of the wilderness. Whereas Edom saith, we are beaten down, but we will return, and build the waste places. Thus saith Jehovah of hosts, they shall build, but I will throw down, and men shall call them the border of wickedness, and the people against whom Jehovah hath indignation forever. And your eyes shall see this. You'll even see this very thing that God told me that. So when he says, Jacob I love, but Esau I hated or love less, he told me about the two nations, not the two boys, but the choice of the one over the other is to show that God acts according to his purpose, his own purpose, after the counsel of his will, and not after the idea of men. This is what God's going to show you. But also the character of the two men, the two nations designated here. Two nations, the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. That is, Esau, who represents the a fleshly element, the profane, as he's called in Hebrews, a profane individual. And a profane person is one who lightly esteems sacred things. All right, now he's that kind of an individual. And he represents that type of character. Jacob represents that which is concerned with the spiritual. And so I think this is what you mean here by the stronger than the other people. And I think the spiritual is always stronger than the fleshly. This is indicated through the Bible. And the elder shall serve the younger. And when the days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came forth red. All right? Ruddy. All over like a hairy garment. And they called his name Esau, which means hairy. H-A-I-R-Y. Not H-A-R-R-Y, as we name him, but H-A-I-R-Y. Indicating that he was a rugged-looking little fellow from his birth there. All right? And after that came forth his brother, and his hand had hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. That is one that takes by the heel or supplants, or literally a healer. H-W-L-E-R, not H-A-L. H-W-L-E-R, a healer. One who supplants or takes hold of the heel. I think it indicates that an immediate birth, that as soon as the one was born, here was the hand of the other extended from the womb and coming forth. And Isaac was 80 years old when she bare. Wait a minute, I said 80 a while ago. No, he was 60, 20 years later. And I guess he was, he would be how old, 75 when his father died. That's right, that's why you got it. I was wrong a while ago. He was 75 when Abraham died. Well, Abraham died 175, and he was 80 and 140, that's right. So it'd be about 15 years there, I think, is what I figured it out today. 80 years old when she bare them. And the boys grew, and Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field. Now, the field doesn't mean an agriculturist. He wasn't that at all. He was a man of the wide open spaces. He was a fellow that didn't settle down. He was here and yonder. He was a hunter, lived by it. And Jacob was a quiet man, or harmless, or perfect, the Hebrew says. That is one entirely different here, dwelling in tents. Now, Jacob, as you can see, he was the one concerned with the spiritual matters. Now, Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, and Rebekah loved Jacob. I think you have the idea in Isaac here. He sees in Esau that which he wasn't. And he was attracted to that because he was a man entirely different from Esau. A man that made a lot of money. He was a very wealthy man, as we're going to see after a while, and a good businessman. But anyway, he loved Esau because he did eat of the venison. He liked the, he had a taste for that, and indicating there that there was a side to him there. We don't see before. Rebekah loved Jacob, and Jacob boiled pottage, a kind of a red lentil soup or whatever it was. And Esau came from the field, and he was faint, evidently exceedingly hungry, coming in from the hunt, from the field where he had been. And Esau said to Jacob, "Feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, or red, for I am faint." Therefore was his name called Edom, which means red. So Esau meant hairy. Edom meant red. So he was called Esau, or his people, the Edomites. They dwelt in the red land south of the Dead Sea there, down in that area, and it were called red. And Jacob said, "Sell me first thy birthright." Now, the way he introduces this seems to me that they had discussed this before. That Jacob was concerned with the birthright. Maybe he tried to buy it. Maybe he tried to get it. Shouldn't have done that because God had promised it to him. God had told Abraham that it would be in Isaac, Jacob. It wouldn't be the other one. And Jacob said, "Sell me first thy birthright." And Esau said, "Behold, I'm about to die, and what profit shall the birthright do to me?" I don't know whether he means it. I'm about to die now, or well, I'm going to die anyway, and that birthright's way down yonder. What difference does that make to me? A lot of folks feel that way about it. So I'm not living for pie in the sky. I want mine now. I'm going to live it up now. Seemingly has some such idea, called a profane person, and that word simply means one who lightly esteems that which is sacred. And Jacob said, "Swear to me first." And he swore unto him, and he sold his birthright unto Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and did eat and drink, and rose up and went his way, indifferent to what he had done. It meant nothing to him. So Esau despised his birthright, lightly esteemed it. Now you have that idea, a profane person over here in Hebrews, or you remember the passage, you know, he's turned to it and read it. You're familiar with it. How that he was a profane person, despised his birthright, sold it for a mess of pottage. Well, he's not the last profane person that's ever lived, but many a person who has sold his spiritual birthright for a mess of pottage. I had a card the other day from a little grandson. I don't know why he wrote, but he wrote to me and said, "Dear Papa, said, I was very hungry. I'm very hungry. And just real hungry. And I remembered Esau. I guess what he meant was he wasn't going to sell his birthright for something to eat. But I didn't get quite. He said I made 100 on the spelling test. Now, I guess that's about average for a little 10-year-old boy is to want me to know he'd been studying about Esau, I guess. That's what I inferred. He just studied it. But anyhow, he remembered Esau, so he wouldn't sell his birthright for a mess of pottage, though he was real hungry. All right. Now, in the next chapter, this 26th chapter, and I'm going to just run through this rather hurriedly and briefly because I wanted to get through this tonight. Start with 27 next time. Well, there was a famine in the land besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. Now, we had that some time ago, you remember. Abraham, instead of going into Egypt, he went into the land of Gerar there, and had about the same experience. But now remember that this is a full 100 years later. This is 100 years after Abraham's experience. Some have tried to say that this is just a duplicate in two different writers, and one writer wrote attributed to Abraham and the other one to Isaac, and all that sort of thing. No, it's a similar experience here. The son acts after his father, as his father had. And Isaac went unto Abimelech, king of the Philistines, unto Gerar, and Jehovah appeared unto him and said, go not down into Egypt, dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee, and will bless thee. For unto thee and unto thy seed I will give all these lands, and I will establish the oath which I swear unto Abraham thy father. Now notice here the renewed promise, and I will multiply thy seed as the stars of heaven, and will give unto thy seed all these lands, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. Now that's the same promise that he'd made unto Abraham in Genesis 12. Now, and repeated it in chapter 15 and 17 and 22. Now then, the promise is made unto Isaac. And I think you ought to have that marked in your Bible, because that Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. Now, what those laws were, I don't know. I know that when God said, get out of your land into the land I showed you, he went. I know when God told him to go and offer Isaac, he did that. And I know that there are a number of things, and when God told him to be circumcised, he was, and circumcised Isaac. I'm not convinced that those few times that God told him what to do sums up all that's included in this verse. Personally, I'm persuaded that from the days of Adam and before the flood, laws that were given unto Noah and that Noah passed on, that there were laws and statutes and commandments and ordinances that God had given unto mankind that most of the world had forgotten. Now, Abimelech hadn't. Abimelech still holds to some of those things. Melchizedek, you remember, still faithful to God. We find a few who were. Alright, and so here now, he has kept all of these. That's been an interesting statement to me. And also in Isaiah 24, verses 4 and 5, God speaking of the earth there, the world, the earth, they had rejected the everlasting covenant, broken my laws, my commandments, and so on. I just want to read that to you and suggest to you that here is something for you to study and think about in this matter of man being under law. Always has been. 24th chapter and verse 5, he starts in up here with the inhabitants of the earth scattered here and all of that, what God will do with them. Now he said the earth also is polluted under the inhabitants thereof, because they have transgressed the laws, violated the statutes, broken the everlasting covenant. Therefore hath the curse devoured the earth, and they that dwell therein are found guilty. Therefore the inhabitants of the earth are burned, and few are left. Now, I don't believe that Isaiah 24, 5, 6, and 7 is dealing simply with the Jews. I think he's talking about a world judgment that was coming upon the world, the earth, the inhabitants of the earth, and that they had broken the everlasting covenant. I do not know what it was. I don't know what the laws were. But it was something, a covenant that God had made. Some background was never recorded. It was my own conviction in the matter. That it is a covenant that God had made that was not recorded with law. Abraham kept them. Now then, by the time you come to Isaiah, the inhabitants of the earth had rejected all of these and violated them. But I am persuaded there was some kind of a covenant or laws that God had given, which they did not keep. Now, the last people we find that are keeping the laws of God, or in any way other than the descendants here of the Jews, were Reuel, the father-in-law of Moses, and Balaam, the renegade prophet, called a sorcerer. But in a way, he did know about God and, in a sense, served God, but not faithfully and fully. To me, those are the last two that I've ever found in the Old Testament that served God in any way. The rest completely apostatized, and God gave them up. Here's another thing I want you to think about. That is in Romans, the first chapter, in about verse 24 or 5, when it says that they exchanged the truth of God for a lie. Can you exchange something that you don't have for something else? Could you exchange tonight, if this building was up for sale here, could you exchange a $1,000 bill for this building? Not a person here could do it. Why? Not a one has $1,000 in his pocket. At least I'm going to venture that. Not a one of us has a $1,000 bill now in his pocket. They quit making them. I don't think they make them anymore. But anyway, you couldn't exchange the truth of God for a lie if you didn't have the truth. The Gentiles had the truth. They exchanged for a lie. I do not know what all was included in it. Now, I mention that because of this statement for you to think about. What a class, the purpose of a class is to challenge people to think. Not to, here's a funnel and just pour something in a barrel here and go on. Challenge people to think. Now, take these passages and think on them. Then let that bring you then to some conclusions that might go out of that. As to the law of Christ and the old law and these matters are there. Well, I'll leave that for you to think about. Right, now, Isaac dwelt in Gerar there, told him that Rebecca was his sister. And I guess this Abimelech evidently, same title of his grandfather of years gone by, that Abraham dealt with, I'm persuaded he was getting suspicious of Isaac and whether Rebecca was his sister or not, for he looked out the window, that would be a lattice, and saw, and behold, Isaac was sporting, that is, caressing, Rebecca his wife. And Abimelech called Isaac and said, behold, of a surety she is thy wife. And that word, of a surety, indicates he's already suspicious of it. I think he's rather suspicious of this setup, that it was not, she was not actually his sister. And how sayest thou, she is my sister? And Isaac said, because I said, lest I die because of her. And Abimelech said, what is this that thou hast done unto us? One of the people might easily have lain with thy wife, and thou wouldst have brought guilt upon us. Now this showed that there was still a concept of the right and the wrong of adultery, and of these matters. He knew that. And Abimelech charged all the people, saying, he that toucheth this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. Right? Now, here's something new. And Isaac sowed in that land and found in the same year 100-fold. Now, we have no account of Abraham ever turning to agriculture, nor do we have Isaac doing it until now. But here he turns to agriculture here and sowed, and Jehovah blessed him. And he waxed great there in this. Now then, verse 14, the last of the Philistines envied him. Now all the world which his father's servants had digged in the days of Abraham his father, the Philistines had stopped and filled with dirt or earth there. Now note the envy becomes spite. They he prospered, they envied him, and now then they show spite unto him by filling up these wells. Now here's a point I want you to note, this fine quality in the character of Isaac. This is a manifestation of the very spirit characterized by Christ. That is a meekness that, and the Bible, New Testament teaches of accepting evil for good. That's the way they treated Jesus. And Abimelech said unto Isaac, go from us, for thou art much mightier than we. And Isaac departed thence and encamped in the valley of Gerar, and dwelt there. Now notice here, Abimelech recognizes you are mightier than we are. He didn't have to take all of this. He could have whipped the bunch down there, and they knew that. All right? And Isaac departed thence and encamped. Now he came down, and he, verse 20 here, and he digged another well there, the people there, the Philistines, came and said, the water is ours. And he came and called the name of the well Esek, which means contention. Because they contended with him. He left there, gave it to them, and they digged another well, and they strove for that also. And he called the name of it Sitnah, which means enmity here, or hostility. Enmity or hostility. And removed from thence and digged another well. And for that they strove not. And he called the name of it Rehobah, that is, the broad places, or plenty of room. And he said, for now Jehovah hath made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land. Now, I don't know whether Abraham would have done that or not. Abraham might have taken the 318 soldiers and raided them. I don't know what he would have done. He might not have. He might have done like this fellow did. But Isaac gave him the well and went on. And that's better than striving. That's better than fighting. Jesus says, turn the other cheek also. Go the extra mile. Though that's contrary to our human nature, it always pays off. It's always a better way to do. And he shows that disposition. Now, I don't think it was weakness. I don't think it was cowardice. I think it was that spirit or disposition that you see in him. There was a spirit in Abraham, a spirit in him, and a spirit in Jacob. There are three different men here, and they're entirely different kinds of individuals. And maybe that's the point there. But at any rate, and he went up from thence to Beersheba, verse 23, and Jehovah appeared unto him, and this is the second time. He appeared up unto him up and told him not to go down into Egypt. Early part of the chapter. Jehovah appeared unto him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham, thy father. Fear not, for I am with thee, and will bless thee and multiply thy seed for my servant Abraham's sake. Now, that's the only time I believe that Jehovah, at least the first time, and I believe the only time, that is, Abraham is ever spoken of as the servant, my servant. I mean in Genesis. Maybe later on, but I don't remember it. And he built an altar. Now this is the first altar that Isaac has built. He built it where? He had Beersheba. An altar there. And they digged another well there, the servants did. Now that was essential, of course, to his large flocks. Alright, now, then Abimelech went up to him with his captain Phicol and also a friend, Ahuzah, here to make a covenant with him. Very similar to the covenant that his grandfather had made with Abraham, the father or grandfather, I'm assuming his grandfather, made with Abraham. Now notice he said, you're strong here. First Isaac asked him this question, verse 27, wherefore are you come unto me, seeing you hate me, and have sent me away from me? What do you want? What have you come bothering me again for? And they said, we saw plainly that Jehovah was with thee. And we said, let there now be an oath between us, even betwixt us and thee, and let us make a covenant with thee, that thou wilt do us no hurt, as we have not touched thee, and as we have done unto thee nothing but good, and have sent thee away in peace. Thou art now the blessed of Jehovah. He doesn't stop to argue the question. Maybe that's another good lesson we need to learn. Why argue the question? Where you treated me back of the well. Let bygone be bygone. It's a lot better. That's a lot. I think you can learn a lot from Isaac. Rather bland character, yes. Not the exciting type, no. But yet a man from whom we can learn some great lessons that point to to that which Jesus Christ taught centuries later. And he made him ate them a feast, and they did eat and drink, and they rose up betimes in the morning, and swear one to another, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. And it came to pass the same day that Isaac's servants came and told him concerning the well where they had digged, and said unto him, We have found water. And he called it Sheba. Therefore the name of the city is Beersheba unto this day. Now Sheba means oath. Now back in the other passage we studied in 21:31, where Abraham made the oath, and there were 7 ewes there he gave, and it was called Beersheba, the well of the 7. Now I think it indicates both. There's a little difference in the spelling of the 2 words, very little. But Beersheba, the well of the 7, also becomes the well of the oath. For here he had made an oath with these people, they would dwell together in peace. And then when Esau was 40 years old, he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and they were a grief of mind unto Isaac and to Rebekah. Now that shows again the attitude of Esau, no concern for the spiritual whatever. He married a couple of these Canaanitish women, and certainly that influenced him, no doubt, but it shows that he is not concerned with the spiritual. We know nothing about these women particularly, except the Canaanites were very wicked people, and now then he becomes marries one of them. Well, so much then for our lesson tonight. We're going to leave it right there, and I'll not be here next Tuesday. I will be back a week, 2 weeks from tonight. And that night, we will try to cover 3 chapters, if I can, or if I can't, it doesn't matter. As a place, I want to stop there, somewhere along there. And wherever I come to the stopping place for the summer, I'll stop there. I'm sorry I don't get to finish this. I wanted to so very badly, but we didn't make it. Any question of what we've studied tonight? Let me count us again, see how many we have here. How many have back there? 3 or 2? Oh yeah, 3, all right. I can't count them that way. Maybe you got to count me out. I got to mix that up. That's about it. Coming 2 weeks from tonight, we hope to see you again the last time for several weeks. All right, pass it. Generations of Isaac, beginning with verse 19 of chapter 25, and Isaac's some of his travels and sojourns. We're still dealing with him tonight in chapter 27. So we'll have your attention and we'll begin. We're down to chapter 27. I want to look at the last 2 verses of chapter 26. And when Esau was 40 years old, he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri, the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite. Both of them were Hittites, really. And they were a grief of mind unto Isaac and to Rebekah. Now, it seems to me that that's the thing that moved Isaac here, and especially Rebekah, to try to get Jacob, a wife from her own people. But you'll notice the way that they went about this, misrepresentation, deceit, and all of that, which we certainly cannot appreciate either in Rebekah or in Jacob. But at any rate, these were grief unto both of these. Now that raises the question here, and I don't know if Esau was 40 years old when he took these two women. How long was it from that time until our incident in this lesson tonight? I don't know. I have read, but I didn't go back and try to check and see if I could determine it. But someone has estimated that Jacob was 77 years old when he left for Haran and thus married the two women there. That would make him getting quite along in years. Now, whether that's correct or not, I don't know. I hadn't thought about him as being that old, but I know that he was beyond 40, and how long beyond 40, we don't know. But now we come to that incident in the life of Jacob that we all just can't respect him for it. And it came to pass that when Isaac was old and his eyes were dim, so that he could not see, he called Esau, his eldest son, and said unto him, my son, and he said unto him, here am I. And he said, behold, now I am old. I know not the day of my death. Interesting statement, but yet it's one that's, none of us know that, and does anybody ever know it? What is the day of his death? Now therefore take, I pray thee, thy weapons, thy quiver and thy bow, and go out to the field. That is out, not into the mountains or into the woods, but out not into a cultivated field, but where the deer would be found. And take me venison, and make me savory food such as I love, and bring it to me, that I may eat, that my soul may bless thee before I die. Now, with all of the what little we know about Isaac, not a great deal told, a very quiet man, but it seems to me that he especially loved Esau, because maybe in Esau he saw that which he wishes he might have been. You know, that's so often true, that a father sees in a son that which he dreamed of and wished nature or disposition. Heard when Isaac spake to Esau his son, and Esau went to the field to hunt for venison and to bring it. And Rebekah spake unto Jacob her son, saying, behold, I heard thy father speak unto Esau thy brother, saying, bring me venison and make me savory food, that I may eat and bless thee before Jehovah, before my death. It seems to me that Isaac here is trying to get ahead of Jehovah. Now, he knew what Jehovah had said to him, and I am sure that he knew what God had said to Rebekah when these two sons were born, when they were struggling in her womb, that the elder would serve the younger. Now, he wants to get, seems to me at least, that Isaac wants to get ahead of Jehovah here and give to Esau the blessing, notwithstanding the fact that he knew what God had said concerning the two men, what they would be and where the blessing would be. Now, maybe you don't see that, but it seems to me that that's so. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice according to that which I command thee. So here, while Isaac is trying to get ahead of Jehovah in blessing the older son, giving him the blessing, Rebekah now is planning against Isaac to see that Jacob gets it. So it seems to me that you have an insight here into some of the characteristics of this family that maybe we hadn't a suspicion before. So she tells him now to go fetch me from thence two good kids of the goats. and I will make them savory food for thy father, such as he loveth. And thou shalt bring it to thy father, that he may eat, so that he may bless thee before his death. Now, he lived a long time after this, because Esau and Jacob attended the funeral, and that would be between 20 and 30 years later. Now, it may be that he was going through some period of sickness. Maybe there was something else here that caused him to think that he was about to die, and Rebekah to think that. But he didn't. It was a good many years before he died, between 20 and 30. And Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Behold, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. My father, peradventure, will feel me, and I shall seem to him as a deceiver. And I shall bring a curse upon me and not a blessing." Now, he's beginning to look at the chances that he will be taking in pulling this on the father. He hesitates to go along with his mother in this. "And his mother said unto him, Upon me be thy curse, my son. Only obey my voice and go fetch me them." One thing about Rebekah, she impresses us as a woman of strong will, of determination. She doesn't take long to make up her mind. We saw that back when the old servant of Abraham came up to get a wife for Jacob, for Isaac, I mean. And she, when they asked, "Well, will she go?" "Yes," she said, "right now." She made up her mind, said, "Yes, I'll go." In other words, it didn't take her long. She was strikes us as a strong character in that way. And he went and fetched and brought them to his mother. And his mother made savory food such as his father loved. And Rebekah took the goodly garments of Esau, her eldest son, which were with her in the house, and put them upon Jacob, her younger son. I don't know whether Esau lived in the tent with them, or the house, or the general group of tents there, I don't know, or whether or not he left clothes there as well as in his own home. But at any rate, he had some of his clothes there in their house. And she put the skins of the kids of the goats upon his hands and upon the smooth of his neck, wherever she felt that her husband might feel of this son. While there, she put the skins of these kids of the goats here, right, upon his hands and the smooth of his neck. And she gave the savory food and the bread which he had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. Now, I imagine Jacob was a little nervous over this. I know I would have been. Going into his father, possibly he had never deceived his father before. Maybe he'd never done a thing like this. Now here, there is, first of all, the smoothness of his skin. There is his voice. And all of this that he's going to have to overcome now as he comes in. And he came unto his father and said, "My father," and said, "Here am I. Who art thou, my son?" And Jacob said unto his father, "I am Esau, thy firstborn. I have done according as thou badest me. Arise, I pray thee, sit and eat of my venison, that thy soul may bless me." Now, apparently he was lying down. And so evidently he was going through some siege of sickness there at this time. And Isaac said unto his son, "How is it that thou hast found it so quickly, my son?" And he said, "Because Jehovah thy God sent me good speed." Someone has made the observation that this is the first time that Jehovah was used in an individual deceptiveness or lying or these things. I don't recall any such thing as happening before. But at any rate, he relates Jehovah with his deception, which I think adds to the sin of what he is doing. "Jehovah has sent me good speed." And Isaac said unto Jacob, "Come near, I pray thee, that I may feel thee, my son, whether thou be my very son Esau or not." The old man is suspicious. Got back here, he got back too quick. Maybe the voice, as he says later, the voice is that of Jacob. Pretty hesitant. And Jacob went near unto Isaac his father, and he felt him and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." I've heard that
viewed as an illustration of an individual listening to the voice instead of the feeling. And you can make that application if you want to. A lot of people talk about how they feel. It's a whole lot better to listen to what God said and to listen to the voice than to listen to how you feel. But at any rate, I've heard the illustration used. I might have used it sometime. I don't recall. The hands are of Esau. And he discerned him not, because his hands were hairy as his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. And he said, "Art thou my very son Esau?" And he said, "I am." Still a little doubtful, isn't he? Are you really my son Esau? Yeah, the hands all right. And you brought me the food. But your voice still isn't just what it should be. And I think the old man is still a little skeptical here. And he said, "I am." And he said, "Bring it near to me, and I will eat of my son's venison, that my soul may bless thee." And he brought it near to him, and he did eat. And he brought him wine, and he drank. And his father Isaac said unto him, "Come near now, and kiss me, my son." And he came near and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his raiment, and blessed him. That is, the garments had the smell of the field. You can go out into the desert here and come in, and your clothes have the smell of the desert. And so now here is the feeling of his hands and the smell of his raiment. But the voice still doesn't sound just right. He's still a little scary. But now he blesses him anyway. He blessed him and said, now I want you to note the nature of this blessing here. "See, the smell of my son is as the smell of the field which Jehovah hath blessed." That indicates here, it reminds Isaac of the things that are blessed of Jehovah, the field out here, and that Jehovah hath blessed. "And God give thee of the dew of heaven, and of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and new wine." Right, now, the first aspect of this blessing is that of food, plenteous food, the material necessities. Now, second, here's a political or a power he will have over people. You can call it political or something of that nature. "Let people serve thee, and nations bow down to thee." Right, now, third, his brethren, his relation to them. "Be Lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be everyone that curseth thee, and blessed be everyone that blesseth thee." Now you will notice in that he does not mention the spiritual blessing. That comes in later. These are really material blessings, political blessings, or a blessing of ascendancy over his brothers here, being above them. Well, that's what God had said back in the when the two were struggling in the mother's womb, that the elder should serve the younger. Now he's trying here to reverse God's order. I think there's a lot of mistakes here. Here's Rebekah and Jacob trying to deceive Isaac. Here is Isaac trying to get ahead of God in this matter, and Rebekah is trying to get ahead of Jehovah in this matter, and a whole lot of lack of faith in this. I think this is one of what I would call rather the, shall we call it, ugly period, if you don't like the word ugly, at least a rather disappointing event in the lives of these two people, or these people whose faith is supposed to be in God, who are servants of God. And it came to pass as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, and Jacob was yet scarce gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from his hunting. Now, Jacob just barely got out in time. Just as he finished then, he got out the door good, for Isaac is back. Esau is back, rather. And he also made savory food and brought it unto his father. And he said unto his father, "Let my father arise and eat of his son's venison, that thy soul may bless me." And Isaac his father said, "Who art thou?" And he said, "I'm thy son, thy firstborn Esau." Well, I think Esau would be surprised. The father just sent him. He came back hurriedly. The father said, "Who are you?" And, of course, he immediately becomes suspicious in just a few moments. And Isaac trembled very exceedingly and said, Who then is he that hath taken venison and brought it me? And I have eaten of all before thou camest, and have blessed him. Who was it? I want to say another word about Rebecca. Rebecca must have been a pretty good cook. She was able to take the two kids there and fix that savory food to make it taste like venison. She knew what her husband liked. And no doubt cooking for him for all these 75 or 80 years, however long it had been, maybe longer, why, she knew how to prepare that food for him. And she had done that. And he never became suspicious of the food. Yea, and he shall be blessed. I want you to note that. He shall be blessed. I can't take back that blessing. He shall be blessed. When Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with an exceeding great and bitter cry, and said unto his father, Bless me, even me also, O my father. Now remember, he had despised the birthright, sold it for a mess of pottage. But now then, he does want a blessing. Maybe he's thinking here of something material rather than spiritual. And he said, Thy brother came, with guile and hath taken away thy blessing. Father says that. And he said, Is not he rightly named Jacob? This is where Esau replies. For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he hath taken away my blessing. That is, as I pointed out back when the two were born, the word Jacob means supplanter, or literally healer.